Welcome to Design Aloud, a podcast where we delve into the world of UX design and research. Each week, we bring you in-depth discussions with UX researchers, designers, and industry experts as we explore the ways in which good design can create positive and meaningful experiences for users. From the latest trends and techniques in UX to the ethical considerations that come with it, we cover it all. So, if you're a UX professional, a designer enthusiast, or just someone who cares about creating intuitive and satisfying products, join us on Design Aloud.
Okay, so welcome, Anna. I have heard that you are not Hungarian, but you have a Hungarian name, right?
Yes, that's correct. That's a big reason for misunderstandings and people trying to speak to me in Hungarian, understandably.
How frequently does it happen, by the way?
All the time, especially with stuff like LinkedIn, you know, where people reach out to you. I mean, I don't blame anyone. It's definitely misleading. But yes, it is indeed true. I have a Hungarian name, but I do not speak Hungarian.
And so you were born in Hungary, I guess? Or
No. I was born in Russia, and I moved to Serbia when I was 13. Now I live in Hungary, and my partner is Hungarian. So I use their last name, hence the Hungarian name.
That's why. Yes. So it's not like it's just a recent thing that you are spoken to in Hungarian, I guess.
Well, yeah, I changed the name like 5 years ago. So yes, kind of.
Not quite recent, but okay.
More
all right, yeah, let's start. So welcome, Anna. For just a quick intro, how would you introduce yourself without using your name and profession?
Very interesting question. I would say that I'm a nerd and a geek in any possible sense of the word. I am definitely like a book person, but also a video games person, and all the fandoms that you can think of, I'm definitely a part of. So I'd say this is like the biggest part of my personality, being engaged in like fan spaces, being really into books or video games. So that's how I'd say I'd introduce myself.
What kind of books and games do you like?
I'm mostly into fiction in terms of books. So not as much like nonfiction stuff, although I do read it like for work, for self-development, I guess. But yeah, I like what people commonly refer to as genre fiction. That would be anything from mysteries to science fiction, to fantasy, to romance, to, I don't know, adventure, whatever you can think of. I really like that. So I read a lot of different genres. And video games wise, mainly action RPGs, I would say, although I do branch out into occasional FPS, like Borderlands is one of the favorites. But yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah, I was playing Borderlands before as well. So yeah, great game.
Yes. Great, amazing, yes. Which part like of the franchise?
I think it's 2 and the pre-sequel. So in the PS3, the PS4, Yeah, I haven't touched Borderlands 3, so yeah.
Don't recommend.
Okay. Then I won't. I was just about to ask you, since you have, like, you said your personality is involved in like books, games, and fandoms, and some people, like me, for example, I could get a lot of knowledge from games and game design to UX design, which I do now. Do you have anything in your work and in your professional life that you could gather from your hobbies?
Absolutely. As you said, I think games, video games, and game design are kind of a big platform that I have like as I use as a hobby, but also learn a lot from professionally, especially working in accessibility. I feel like most, if not all, kind of digital accessibility innovations these days happen in games. The rest of like tech world just picks things up, and games are truly being innovative in how they approach it, and how like some games do total accessibility, looking at Last of Us 2. which is widely considered to be the most accessible game to date. Yeah, I feel like there's definitely a lot to learn and a lot of exciting things are happening in game industry in terms of accessibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I've seen this tendency on PlayStation that Ratchet and Clank, God of War, Horizon, and mm-hmm. yeah, as you said, Last of Us are all like really big on accessibility, which is really great to see. And Microsoft with the adaptive controller.
Yep.
That's something that's that was really interesting for me to see, and something that I wouldn't even consider, you know, something in my life. But for a lot of others, it just opened up gaming for them. So that's really nice.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's turn to your life again. So in terms of your first job, how was it, and what did you learn? Mainly, yeah, like your first professional, like career job.
Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting topic for me because my first job, so to say, was a startup that I founded with a friend. Yes, which was definitely very educational. I learned a lot, not only in terms of design. So I was fulfilling like the design part of the startup. I learned a lot of things in different kind of parts of having to run a business, from marketing to sales, like having to do cold calls, finding customers, doing like, so to say, CSM, customer support, or customer management. So all of those different aspects of like having to run your own business, I guess, your own startup. It was interesting for sure, but I would say I will never do this again. Once was enough, but yeah, I definitely learned a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Startups are like high risk, high reward. So I guess for your first job, it was a really high risk to do something like that. Did it involve anything in terms of UX and accessibility? So like how was
not the really startup? So it was sports related startup. So we were doing sports marketing, sports design, approaching football clubs and like other sports entities. We worked with a sports ministry of a country that I will not name, but it was definitely an interesting experience. And it was definitely mostly graphic design, or I guess like marketing related brand design and so on. But I did get to kind of touch UX, UI for the first time. I mean, we needed obviously our own website, we needed this type of like presentation online, and it was all on me. So I would say it was my first touch with the world of UI and a little bit UX, but that's where I got interested.
Yeah, I guess that's like a really interesting curve that your career passed. So I guess it was graphic design and this website design UX that transitioned you to full on UX research and design and accessibility. Can you get me through like the transition and where did it lead you?
Yes. So basically, as I mentioned, I got interested. So I took a 3-month like bootcamp / course in UX specifically. Mm-hmm. And it was very hands-on. We did like a capstone project by the end of it. And it was like my first purely UX project in my portfolio. And it helped me get my first like mixed job. It was not purely UX UI position, but it combined kind of the graphic design that I was already doing with some UX UI work. So I guess that was like around 2018. So I shifted from like pure graphic and brand design to UX UI. And accessibility wise, it just was a topic. I feel like that was presented to me as a the quality of work kind of topic. Mm-hmm. So if you do good design, you consider this as well. And I was always interested in topics of inclusion and so on. So I got interested in accessibility as well.
I see that you are also part of Humanity Controlled.
Humanity Centered.
Humanity Centered. Oh, sorry.
God damn it.
Yeah, yeah. Humanity Centered. I am so sorry.
No, that's okay.
Because I don't even know the name of, what is that and what motivates you to work there?
It's not a work per se, it's a community. So Humanity Centered is a design community founded by Vivian Castillo and like co-led by Alba Viljamin. And it's community kind of centered, I guess, on human-centered design. I don't know how to say it without using the word centered too much. But it's basically people who have been working in corporate kind of tech, both designers and researchers and other professionals who really want and care about topics of inclusion, solidarity, care, and ethical design, but maybe have been a bit frustrated with not being able to achieve much with it in terms of like the corporate world and their values. And yeah, just people coming together, Vivian and Alba, they do a really good onboarding kind of module-based course where they introduce you to a lot of great topics. And then it's a lot of community events where people do knowledge sharing, discussions. Alba is leading a great practical ethics session where people bring their cases from work and discuss like how things can be addressed. So it's super great. And I'm just leading a book club in that community on brand. And we've been doing it for 2 years now. It's been pretty successful, if I do say so myself. And especially I'm happy that we were, from the beginning, committed to reading books not about design. Because I feel like most of us in like tech, in design and UX, if we do a book club with our fellow professionals, we jump to design books right away. Mm-hmm. But we were like, what would it look like if we started reading books specifically not about design, learning about other things, but like nonfiction? So we read things on like disability justice, abolition, immigration justice, and other topics. And I feel like we're really learning a lot from branching out. So this is basically what I do in Humanity Centered.
So you mentioned, I guess these are like workshop sessions, right? And yeah, from time to time, they are facilitated and stuff. So, and because there's a lot of frustration in accessibility not being handled in like a big corporate environment like that, how would you measure the success of Humanity Centered? Meaning like, does it achieve progress in these bigger corporations? And I guess because these workshops focus on how to handle these kind of environments meaning big corporations not allowing accessibility to thrive and to be a thing, have you guys had any chance to progress in this?
Okay, this is like a twofold answer. So one, Humanity Centered itself as an org, so Vivian, Alba, and others, they offer consultancy on topics of DEI, so diversity, equity, inclusion. So in that regard, they do great work also with many corporate customers. Mm-hmm. I'm not part of that effort though. So I just am more like a community manager / facilitator, organizing some of the events. So events are not specifically to kind of progress in any specific corporate environment. It's more to give people tools to go back to their work, to their actual like day-to-day job, and being able to advocate for something or being able to address it. So I feel like in that regard, definitely the community has been very successful. I myself definitely expanded my tool set when it comes to like advocate work in corporate settings and increasing attention on certain issues or how to talk about certain topics. So yeah, I feel like in that regard, it's definitely been very helpful.
Okay, thank you. So let's talk about accessibility because I feel like we touched it already. So can you tell me what accessibility is if someone doesn't know, and how did you get into accessibility in the first place?
So I would say accessibility in general, in a broader sense, is kind of ensuring equity of access. So making sure everyone can access your product, experience, application, and so on. And of course, when we talk about accessibility in tech, we mainly talk about so-called web accessibility or e-accessibility or digital accessibility, which pertains to digital products specifically. So making websites accessible, mobile apps accessible, and like other types of applications. So I guess this is like this twofold understanding. But of course, it also applies, for example, to someone in a wheelchair being able to enter a building physically. That is also accessibility. But for us, when we talk about tech products, it's about making sure people with various kinds of disabilities can access our digital products.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get into this? Because we've discussed on you slowly going to UX, UI and research and stuff like that. How did you, I guess, specialize in this field?
So when I started my current job at GoTo, which is former LogMain, I just connected right away with people internally who have been doing this work and advocating for accessibility already, mainly my colleague Wendy Fox, who I want to shout out, doing great work for accessibility for years and really bringing accessibility as a topic to our leadership, really always making it a priority. And yeah, so I just connected with that. And we have a grassroots accessibility champions program, which you might be familiar, is a thing in many different companies. It's people who have other roles, but are passionate about accessibility. So they want to dedicate some of their personal time to developing themselves, learning more about how to make their part of work more accessible, how to advocate for accessibility in their team, and so on. So I've been leading that program with Wendy and others for, I would say, about 2 years now. I mean, specifically accessibility champions. And recently, a little bit earlier this year, I was kind of promoted or slash separated into an accessibility lead role in general, at least in the UX org. But I would say accessibility is definitely something beyond just UXers or designers. So it's more about bringing people from different roles, engineers, product managers, together to try to achieve things.
Mm-hmm. So when you started working in, I guess, formerly LogMain, you studied as a UX designer,
if yes.
And since you switched, technically not switched the role, but you had this role of going through like what accessibility is and how to conduct it into the product, I guess you guys are working accessibility now that you're the accessibility lead into the product as well. Did this transition over the years? How long have you been working at the company?
For 3 years now.
And now that you're accessibility lead, what does your work cover specifically? Because I guess LogMain, as all bigger companies, have a lot of products, or in a certain product, a lot of different teams. And if you're the accessibility lead, I guess you're not accessibility lead for just one of the products, one of the features, but the whole company, I guess. So what does it look like for you jumping in between teams?
So I'm the first of my kind internally. So this is the first time we have a dedicated accessibility role. And that comes with a lot of trial and error, I would say, or learning. So I myself am also figuring out what it means to be an accessibility lead at GoTo. I just started in late August, so it hasn't been this long. But yes, as you mentioned, the biggest maybe challenge, but maybe also an opportunity, is that we have a portfolio of products. So it's not just figuring out how to make just one thing accessible. And it's not even like on me to join different teams or go to different teams and do the accessibility work for them. I see for now my biggest goal as equipping every team to be able to do their best accessibility work. So it's not something that like one person or one team can accomplish for everyone. It's more like, how do we ensure that everyone can do this? That if someone makes product X or product Y, they have all the tools, all the knowledge, and the resources to make their product or part of the product accessible. So I would say this is my primary objective, and I'm still figuring out how that looks like in practice, achieving this.
I guess like jumping from team to team and getting folks up to the accessibility standards of the company, that sounds like a hectic job, right? Or a job that's not quite easy to manage. Do you have a best practice to managing multiple teams and multiple agendas?
So I definitely am not a manager of anything. So I definitely don't manage anyone. Again, I like the lead part in my role. It was actually a discussion because many companies will have an accessibility manager or accessibility officer, which I feel like is more of a punitive title. Like you come in and punish people if they're not accessible, which is not what I'm trying to accomplish. So I would say that I haven't really yet figured out the best way to do it across the board for all teams. But what we're doing right now, since I just got started in August, is trying to establish accessible processes with select teams. So to start with like a smaller scope, right? So if you can figure it out, I feel like very well for a couple of products, a couple of teams, I hope that we can scale it to make it a company-wide standard soon. So yeah, this is basically where I started.
So I guess
smaller scope, trying to do it in this way, and then I hope to scale everywhere.
So it's not like full scale yet, but it's something that has, I guess, just started. Okay. And when you are jumping from team to team and discussing accessibility and the standards of the company, what kind of disabilities should those digital product designers account for? So what are you guys looking out for specifically?
I wouldn't say that we account for specific disabilities. I really like the new concept that the new accessibility guidelines, WCAG 3.0, are introducing of kind of, I guess, access needs versus disabilities. So if we try to kind of account for what disabilities are out there and serve them, it is difficult because sometimes people even with the same type of disability will have different needs or how they use something. And I feel like approaching it with kind of access needs sort of mindset could be easier, at least for us on the product end where we're trying to build for it. So someone can have like a keyboard navigation access requirement or need, right? It, regardless of what type of impairment or disability they might be having. So we can definitely account for that. Or someone could be relying on assistive technology like screen readers or again, some other input method that's different to your keyboard. So again, this is an access need that we can account for and try to serve. So I feel like this is an approach that we've been taking so far, kind of trying to understand the most common access needs and how we can account for them. And I know it's a kind of controversial topic, the accessibility guidelines and compliance, but unfortunately the truth is everywhere in corporate settings, talking about legal compliance can get you a foot in the door.
Oh, yes.
Because, yes, it's one thing to try to make people just care and do the right thing. Not that anyone is saying no, but it's hard to prioritize this like vague doing the right thing. But it's definitely helping to prioritize things when we talk about compliance. And if you are familiar with the guidelines, they also offer kind of a framework to approaching, ensuring the kind of base level of accessibility.
Yeah, it's like a system with more layers. So for example, if you are talking about contrast, I guess that the contrast ratios are the most common things that designers account for, because it's not just for visually impaired people, but it's for like normal eyesight seeing people. Yeah, so for example, that this AAA system, which is, I guess, in WCAG guideline 3 as well.
No, actually, it isn't. Three? So WC, Yes. So today, what you mentioned, single A, double A, triple A, this is in WCAG 2.0 or 2.1, most kind of worldwide used iterations. So they are the legal standard in most countries. But the WCAG that I was talking about is 3.0, which is still in the works. It has not been finalized or released. So it actually is like in a beta version, I could say. So you can, like anyone can give feedback on it right now and participate in its creation. Mm-hmm. And they're taking away the AA, AAA tiers. And then they're introducing bronze, silver, and gold levels. So this will be a new thing. But people shouldn't be afraid because it will not become a legal standard yet, for sure. So we'll keep AA, AAA as our kind of legal guidance for a while. But I feel like the WCAG 3.0 hopefully will do a better job because it really kind of removes this kind of situation in our industry today where it's possible to audit everything accessibility-wise like by one person who doesn't even have any disabilities, which is fine in terms of limited resources and constraints. But the new WCAG introduces kind of usability testing with disabled people as a requirement. So you can't say I'm like silver level compliant if it's just like one engineer has sat down and tested everything with like a screen reader or a, a color contrast filter, having tested certain things with people with specific access needs and disabilities will be part of the requirements. So I feel like it's a step forward.
Yeah, it's a step forward for, I guess, validating that that the compliance is actually met. Well, my question is about this, is that for GoTo and for other companies in the future regarding accessibility as a strong point in their pipeline, that means more work and more people focusing on a field. How big of a deal is it in action? Because you have experience with this.
I mean, as I said, it will not become a legal guidance, at least for a while, maybe possibly ever. So it's just a new level of becoming accessible for products that really care about it. Because, how do I say, for like for certain fields and industries, I feel like meeting even the AA, WCAG is a challenge. Like for us internally, it's also not easy and also not always immediately obvious how to meet it for certain products, like depending on specific use cases and so on. So I feel like this is for people who want to take it to the next level. So if you're already at WCAG, AA, AAA, there will be something to go further and to say we are now silver level compliant or gold level compliant, and people will know that it means that you actually tested with disabled users.
Oh, so it actually adds up on the AA, AAA system and just gets validated by actual user research and research with and tests with actual.
So, no, again, yes and no. So it doesn't add on. So today, WCAG is based on the concept of success criterions, success criteria, I guess. I don't know what's the plural of criteria. and if you have seen how the standard is laid out, it's basically a list of four accessibility principles, which are POR, perceivable, operable, understandable, robust. And then each one breaks into specific criteria, success criteria. What does it mean to be perceivable, for example? And success criteria will say, oh, like, for example, I'm thinking which one is the perceivable one. Probably like the color contrast is in the perceivable section. So that color contrast meets the 4.5.1 kind of level. And WCAG 3.0 will really step away from the concept of success criteria. So they have a new mode of introducing these requirements. I'm not super familiar, so I will not speak any further to not confuse people. But I, if anyone's interested, I really recommend checking it out because, again, as I mentioned, it's a work in progress. So there are, for example, rounds of kind of public review and them collecting feedback. I'm very curious how it will end up and how it will look like, because there's definitely been kind of conversation in the community about how WCAG itself is not very accessible. If you've seen the guidelines, they are pretty, like, technically written, how do I say, very non-accessible writing. They're sometimes hard to understand or a bit, like, vague, and people need to, like, sit with them and research further to understand what's required of them. So I hope that WCAG will just be more accessible to everyone to approach it as a guideline and actually implement it in their work.
I guess it's a way to be more clearer in, like, hopefully, what needs to be met. At GoTo, and I guess in other companies, but let's talk about GoTo and your work specifically. So is there any time where being accessible and meeting accessibility standards interfere with design decisions and like the art way of doing product design?
Interesting question. I mean, I have not been on, like, the art end of design for a long time myself. But I imagine that what we do sometimes do is introduce more constraints into someone's work, right? So you can use less colors or less color combinations, or, for example, certain transparency options are out of question because they will create, again, for example, contrast problems. I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to say if it introduced difficulties for the art or, like, creative part of the process, because I'm not on that end of work. I wonder if my colleagues would say that it's more difficult to make things accessible. But I would say that one big, I hope that a big helpful thing is that I'm working tightly with our design system team, and we're trying to ensure the design system itself is as accessible as possible. So I feel like this definitely helps with a certain base level of, for designers especially, but also for engineers, since it's a component library, to make things to a certain level already accessible if you just use the design system. So I hope if people can be creative with the design system, they can also be creative with accessibility, because we try to make sure those come hand in hand.
Yeah, like giving it a new standard in terms of the design system, and like future features will need to be compliant. Yeah, to the design system at least. How does it affect, like, how long a feature is designed and developed? Because if we are taking in more and more things in account, for example, accessibility standards, that means more time to actually design and assess all the building blocks of a feature, let's say. How do you guys combat this or solve this at GoTo?
Great question. I don't know if we yet have a successful answer to this, because that was definitely one of the biggest, like, objections that we're hearing when we try to advocate for accessibility, is not people saying, oh, we don't want to do accessibility. It's people saying, oh, we have a tight deadline, and we're not sure accessibility can be a part of it. So I'm still figuring out how to address this objection, like, as a person having experience in sales from my startup days, I understand that each objection has to have, like, a proper answer. So I'm still working on that. But what I feel like, again, going back to my original kind of mission, I feel like if we make it part of the process, and we really remove friction with making it part of a process, hopefully we can achieve, like, no delays. Because I think a lot of people who don't understand accessibility well think of it as an additional effort. So say you're building a feature, you'll do like a ticket or a story in Jira or something for the UI mockup. You'll do a story for, like, making the front end and back end happen, and you'll do a story for accessibility. But that's not the case. It should not be like that ever. So accessibility, so to say, should be baked in the work of all people participating in building something. So designers, engineers, product managers. And if it's a consideration that you have from the get-go, so if you say starting a mockup in Figma, and you already have all the like color contrast things figured out, and you know how to hand off keyboard navigation compliance to engineers, then I don't think it adds a lot to your work, especially if you keep doing it from project to project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think I understand, because for a lot of us and for a lot of accessibility standards and guidelines, especially like the core ones, I guess WCAG has like mm-hmm. core accessibility guidelines that cover more of the spectrum of what needs to be accounted for, just be something that designers are just building into their pipeline. What I was thinking is that, for example, for SEO marketing, in terms of like uploading images, a lot of sites and blogs and news pages mm-hmm. Annotate their images in like alt text. But for a screen reader, alt text needs to be done for every image. But like that's something that's like for sure, I guess, access work. But if you name your files correctly, then it won't be a problem. If the design system, as you said, accounts for color contrast the right way, the standard way, then that's something that designers shouldn't account for forever, just once, right? So I guess it's more about setting up the basis and setting up just the rule set of how new features are developed and designed, rather than being it in designers' minds all the time and just hoarding work basically towards the design team.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. I feel like, I mean, this is me theorizing. As I said, I haven't achieved this in practice, but I feel like mm-hmm. the end goal is making it part of the process. So it's not something you need to figure out with each project or each feature that you're delivering. It's something that's already like in there and kind of being in consideration from the get-go. And just as you consider like good UX of something, I would say accessibility is part of that, right? So if you are delivering a new feature, you are caring about how easy it will be to use for people in general. And I mm-hmm. would say accessibility is part of that. It's not like yes. an additional yes. topic. It's how easy it is to use for a specific group of people.
Mm-hmm. What are like the most common elements or most common principles in design that is, you know, just so easy to make accessible, but designers overlook it over and over again? Do you have anything in mind?
I mean, I don't know about like overlooking over and over again, but I think the kind of the basic ones that really should be where we start before we try to make things more accessible is, of course, color contrast. So ensuring there's enough color contrast between all elements, like there's not transparency that kind of kills your contrast in certain like backgrounds and so on. Another big topic I would say for designers is handoff. So your kind of Figma file can be all great in terms of accessibility, like you checked color contrast or something, but then when you give it to engineers to actually build, I feel like it's a lot of things that designers can account for that will help engineers make things more accessible. So for example, Daisy Danese in our company, she's doing great work handing off keyboard navigation kind of considerations to her team. So she will have the focus order for all components outlined. So when someone is navigating through like a page, feature, mm-hmm. I don't know, part of the mm-hmm. component with the keyboard, what focus order should look like. And she also highlights all the area labels and like semantic roles and alternative descriptions for each component that is highlighted. Mm-hmm. And I know that she established this process working with her engineers and kind of back and forth, got feedback as to what actually works. So I feel like it's could be on designers to take care of this when we do handoff, so that engineers, when they are looking at our mockups and looking at how should I build this, this consideration is already kind of in their face, right? Because we mm-hmm. thought about mm-hmm. this and we're bringing it to their attention, and hopefully it will also lead them to think about, hey, what else can I consider in terms of accessibility? So I feel like this is a big part of what designers can do in terms of like general features and products being accessible.
Yeah, it's not just designers or engineers. It's working together, like, handovers. So going back to WCAG, specifically 3, which is a bit harder to accomplish since the tests and like testing with actual impaired people. Do you see a future at GoTo where you aim for these titles or these standards met? I guess it's far for the future, but what do you think about it?
I mean, it's definitely something I hope for, but we're definitely still on the WCAG 2.0 and 2.1 kind of level, trying to address that. So I would be happy if we achieved 2.1, like a double A compliance across the board. And then we can definitely go for 3.0 and beyond, because again, as I mentioned, it's a bit of a controversial topic, because I think, and rightfully so, because accessibility shouldn't be only a legal or kind of box ticking exercise, right? So it shouldn't be like, here's a list of things that you just tick and, oh wow, you're the most accessible product ever. Because if, as we mentioned in game design, this is not at all how they approach it. Like Last of Us does not care if it's WCAG compliant. What they care about is, hey, here's like a blind person, he's a deaf person, can they play our game? Mm-hmm. And that's the main criteria. It's not any kind of guidelines. So that's why I say I definitely look for inspiration and kind of learn a lot from the game industry when it comes to accessibility, because I feel like the way they approach it is the end goal. So you start with the user, as it should be in the UX, right? It's not a wild concept. Yeah, so you start with the user and you say, hey, here's a, like a blind person, they want to use my product. How do I make sure that they can use my product?
Yeah, so just do what regular UXers do, but with all the people. Okay, yeah. In terms of the future meaning for all accessibility, what would the future of accessible design look like in your eyes? It can be like a wild idea. So,
I mean, in my eyes, the perfect future is, you know, in accessibility and design justice kind of communities, there's a saying, nothing for us without us. And I feel like we kind of really danced away from this idea, and a lot of accessibility work happens mostly by abled people who have like certain positions of power in the industry. And I would love to see the future where actual disabled people kind of lead the work and lead the way for us, right? So they like really establish what works for them, what doesn't, like what really truly accessible products can look like. And there's a place for them to have kind of structural power to actually change things for themselves.
In this whole future, what are your plans and how can our listeners contribute to making the world more accessible?
My plans is, just to keep advocating for this. I feel like, in my experience at least, it's more of people not knowing that they can do certain things than them not wanting to do those things. So in many cases, when people learn about accessibility or what they can do to be more accessible, they like all in for doing it. So I feel like the more people we can get on board, the more people will do accessible work. And how our listeners can contribute? Well, of course, if you're a designer or an engineer or a product manager, this can just become part of your day-to-day work, this consideration. And just for everyone using digital products out there, you can definitely do things today that help make like the web more accessible. For example, alt text can be added everywhere now. If you're using, I don't know, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and so on, there's an option when you add a picture or even a GIF to add alt text description, and that will help someone with a screen reader. So I feel like there's these small things that we do in day-to-day life, and you can just add this as a consideration. Like, hey, did I add alt text to my Instagram post? So we can all start doing something right now to help with this.
Mm-hmm. And internally in companies and people working for products, how would you advise them to get started and what to focus on at first?
Great question. I mean, as a book person, there's definitely a list of books I typically recommend. One, like for a very, very beginner level, Laura Kalbach's accessibility book from A Book Apart, which is a company you might have heard of. It's a great place to start as a like beginner level. And then another great one is Mismatch by Kat Holmes, who's been working in Microsoft previously, if I recall correctly. So kind of inclusive design practices that are very famous on Microsoft's end. If people are curious about them, Mismatch is a great book. And another great one is Disability Visibility, which is a collection of essays edited by Alice Wong, a great disability activist. And I feel like this is like a must read because people with very different types of disabilities or impairments have shared their stories. And I think like it's a great glimpse into what disability kind of truly means. And it's not this uniform experience. It's different people having different experiences every day. But yes, I feel like it's a great glimpse into what that can look like for different people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I for sure check them out. for people who are inspired by others' work, for example, you know, at UX, we look on Behance, sometimes on Dribbble, and each other's work to just be inspired on how to solve different sets of problems. And you mentioned games, for example. What other apps and products would you consider being inspiring for you specifically?
Great question. I mean, I want to highlight that Microsoft is doing good things in terms of accessibility. For example, the Office suite, so Word, Excel, and PowerPoint have a lot of accessibility built in. So just as like our Outlook, if you drop in a picture, by default, it will offer you to create alt text or even automatically generate alt text. It will not be great because don't use automatically generated anything for now.
Yeah.
It's still not there. But yes, so it kind of brings this to attention of anyone using like PowerPoint day to day, right? That, hey, you can actually add alt text here. And I know that Word is very, in the way it offers you to use it, it can be very accessible for screen readers because it has a base kind of formatting of headers and subheaders, which works with like semantic structure of like HTML. So if you use inbuilt headers and subheaders in Word, it could be read by a screen reader as like H1, H2, and so on. So I feel like they're really on it. They're doing some great work. And of course, as we mentioned before, Xbox Adaptive Controller, they also are releasing an adaptive toolkit, already released, I think, this month, and an adaptive mouse. So both software and hardware-wise, they definitely are kind of leading in the industry. So I'm definitely looking at Microsoft.
Thank you so much, Anna. Do you have any closing thoughts before we wrap up about accessibility?
Not really, but yeah, my closing thought is that accessibility is not scary or difficult. If you're not doing it yet, you should be. Take a look into like what it entails, the books that I mentioned. And there's really a lot of great voices in the disabled community advocating for making things more accessible. Haben Girma, Imani Barbarin, and many others. I feel like we can follow their lead, learn from them, and make our products more accessible.
Okay. Thank you so much, Anna, for this conversation. I learned a lot. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was nice. And I love talking about accessibility. So great conversation.
Yeah. You're really good at talking about it. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Design Aloud. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and learned something new about the world of UX. If you have any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us on social media or through our website, uxstudioteam.com. Be sure to join us next week for more thought-provoking discussions on the latest in UX. Thanks for tuning in.